Good evening, and welcome to the Intake Podcast with Melissa Rose and Michelle Voss.
She's Unger. Extra. Whoops. But I liked it. She's extra raspy.
Extra raspy. Okay. Ready? Set. Hello, my beautiful bestie. How we doing today?
Hello, Melissa Rose. You're a little raspy today, aren't you?
I am. Just when we felt as though our audio was crisp and clean, 12 episodes in, 13 episodes in, we're like, we got this on a lock. And then, whoops, there goes Mel's voice.
But it is kind of nice to have something sound a little different. Like, obviously, as long as you're feeling okay and that squared away, then you can really lean into the personality change that comes with a rasp that lasts a few days.
Yeah, you know, it used to have more novelty than it does now. I'm not going to lie. This used to happen to me 3 or 4 times a year whenever I'd get allergies. And I didn't mind it. I was like, oh, fun little switcheroo.
Yeah, but now you're like, nope, I'm done.
Yeah, I can't sing along in the car to the music with my daughter. So then I just try and it's not great.
Cruel Summer sounds different with a rasp.
Cruel Summer sounds really, that's literally it. I got a lot of dirty looks from the backseat yesterday. At first, just like, what is happening?
Who's driving the car? What did you do with my mom?
No, but I think it's honestly the Cyclops that I have going on in my eye right now that is really making it much worse. For you listeners, it sounds like I'm having a hard time. Not as much as it sounds, though. I feel okay.
You sound worse than you feel. And I can't even really tell. I mean, you're wearing a cute little hat right now. So that's probably assisting.
It's for sure assisting. I'm not going anywhere without a hat and maybe an eye patch until this thing goes away. It's just no fun. But anyway.
No fun. That's just what this week is throwing us. You know, we're rolling. We're rolling.
That's it. I have off tomorrow. I'm going to a girls' dinner for Zoe's birthday, just a couple of us. And
so fun.
It's going to be great. But, you know, of course, a night out in the city with my girlfriends, her eye's going to be swollen shut. Let's do it. Who needs a cute makeup look for the office when you can have one full swollen eye shut to go hang out with your girlfriends?
Listen, drink some Cosmos. Let's see how it goes. Or maybe this is your moment to wear an M-take eye patch.
I'm just going to get a round sticker and just put it on top of my eye.
Help our marketing strategy.
No, but truly, I was talking about this morning with Zoe, actually. Owning your vanity is something that's just needs to be more talked about. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to sit here and act like this doesn't ruin my day.
Because it does.
It does.
It does.
It totally does. Waking up and looking in the mirror and seeing 2 eyelids where there should be one is really humbling.
Cyclops and is not the look you were going for.
No, it's not. I'm not evolved enough. I'm really not evolved enough to look in the mirror and be scared of myself.
Is one ever evolved enough to get to that point?
It sounds like some people are. There's a lot of messaging out there about, like, you know, being happy with the way you look. But today, I'm not. So you really got to carry this episode, all the clips, nothing. Like, no one, just know. I'm going to go silent. I'm going off camera.
To be clear, she doesn't look like a Cyclops. She does not look like she's from a Greek mythology story right now. Okay, everyone. But to her, she does. She feels that. And that's where the validity lies. It's your experience. No one else's, to be clear.
Thank you. Thank you.
But she's okay. Is she okay? She's semi-okay.
I've been worse, that's for sure.
Yeah, but how invalidating is that reply when someone's like, it could be worse? Or when someone starts at least, no, hold that thought because it's invalidating.
I know. I'm really guilty of that. We've talked about this. It's the empath in me. I want to make someone feel better.
Yeah.
But it falls under that bucket of the just wait.
Yes.
But more empathetic. But yes. It's the same messaging. It's really just not validating.
But you can acknowledge and then validate. If no, both totally. Of those things happen, I think it's less invalidating.
Yeah, you're right. Having this thought in real time, while I sound not great, while I don't look my best, I think in the last year plus, the resilience of when you are sick, for example, or maybe you're having a mental health moment and just not feeling your best, how challenging that can be to overcome, and how many more resources you need to pull out of the inside of you to still parent and get everything done that you need to do. Right now in this moment, I feel physically good. Mm-hmm. Hormonally, I feel good. My energy is where it should be. Mentally, I feel good. So, you know, like I said, don't look my best, don't sound my best, but all things considered, easy week, right? Yes. Easy, yeah. Easy, right. Easy. So at least I have my mental and my physical energy,
yeah,
and hormones where they need to be right now. Right. So that is promising.
That's propelling you forward. And right, those experiences, when you do reflect back, can give you the perspective of, okay, I did have it worse, and I'm mm-hmm. able to be a little more resilient now on this new path. My amazing mother-in-law, shout out to you if you're listening. She does listen. She's so cute. But love she that. Always told me before I had kids, she's like, oh, when you have kids and you're sick, no one prepares you enough. So I was so grateful, like, she prepared me for that, because you really don't know how much digging you have to do to mm-hmm. muster the energy, emotional, mm-hmm. physical, all of the above, to take care of others truly when you feel sick or you're vomiting or you just want to lay in bed and watch Netflix for 10 hours. You can't. You can't do
it. No, you can't. And even when you know that and then you get better, you forget.
Oh, yeah.
You really fully don't remember until you're immersed in it. And it's brutal. Out.
Fully blacked out. And then when it happens again, shocked.
Yeah. I don't remember it being this hard.
Yeah, the first time Ryan and I had COVID, our oldest was one. Like just about, that, like yeah. just over one. And I remember we were just laying on the hardwood floor, both of us. Like, don't fall asleep. Yeah, go over, play with that bus. From the floor. It's really hard.
What a wild time for you guys to have a little one. I just missed that window. And the few of you that I'm close with that had little ones during COVID, I mean, because in those moments, you couldn't have an in-law come over and help or do that. It's not like you had the flu and you could go lock yourself away. It was, you got to figure it out. There are no resources here. There's no village.
No, there's no village. I'm laughing because the first time we got COVID, it was at a super spreader event that you weren't at.
I know. I wasn't there.
You dodged that bullet.
I dodged the super spreader event. I did.
Michael did not.
He didn't.
You did.
We had two weddings in the same weekend, and the people that were getting married, we were equally as close with in our own respective rights. So it was one of my best friends and one of Mike's best friends were getting married. So it was, I'm going to go to Florida. I'm going to go to Siesta Key, and you're going to stay in New York. Anyone that lives in the New York City area and was living there in December mm-hmm. of 2021, you know the weekend. Yep. It was the same weekend as SantaCon, whether or not you were attending SantaCon, which like you probably weren't if you're listening to this podcast.
But you all got COVID if you were listening.
Correct. To this podcast. It was that event and that weekend in New York. It wasn't that necessarily the event was a super spreader. It was anyone in Manhattan that weekend got COVID. Anywhere you went, everyone got COVID.
Yes. Was it the Omicron, sir? I think it was Omicron,
yes,
sir.
It was.
And then we were all screwed for the holidays. That right. sucked.
Yeah, it was my birthday weekend. So it was yes. like the 10th, 11th, 12th-ish.
Yep.
But at the time, you had to quarantine for, you know, 2 weeks yep. until your symptoms were gone. So anyone that got it really during that event pretty much canceled Christmas and, yeah. and their holiday plans and stuff. But no, I was down in Siesta Key celebrating Brianna and Ray's wedding. Shout out, Bri.
And
we love you. And love Ray, you. Obviously. But I don't think Ray's listening, but I know Bri is.
And you didn't get COVID.
No, we sure didn't. We were also outside. It was the most beautiful weekend. We'll save that for another day. But we were outside the entire time. We're beaching it. It was
so nice.
Again, it was my birthday.
Oh, living
it
up.
I mean, yeah, it was great. But not so much for you guys.
Oh, I have something to tell you.
Oh.
It just came into my brain. And I was excited to tell you this. You know how I watch my like 5 to 10 minutes of Real Housewives at night as a self-TLC
yes.
thing for myself. And I was watching last night before I fell asleep. And it was Real Housewives of New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
It comes out on Sundays, but I was late. So I watched last night. And Dolores's daughter was wearing a sweatshirt. And on the back of her sweatshirt, it says, "Text me when you get home." And I need to know where she got it, because
we should like DM her or something.
Yeah, we're gonna DM you. Thank you for all of your work that you do with the animals. We need to know where you got your sweatshirt so we can have
yes.
that too.
Oh, we need that. We 100% need that. Speaking of Real Housewives in New Jersey, I saw Siggy. Did I tell you this? I saw Siggy yes. at MV. Did I tell
Ooh.
You?
So, yes, you left a voice note and it was in there. I never commented on it. But, oh, my gosh, how was that?
She looked beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she looked beautiful. She looked really tall and stunning. And she just looked great. She was from afar, though. I froze. Oh. You would think I saw Harry. Harry himself. I literally froze. I think that's Siggy. I haven't watched The Real Housewives in New Jersey. She hasn't even been on in
years.
She's pretty much just another person that lives in New Jersey at this point, but I am a sucker for pop culture, that's for sure.
Oh, yes. It's fun. Like when you see a teacher outside of school, it kind of has that same vibe. Like when you see
Correct.
Someone that you watch on television in just living their lives. Like,
I know
people, they go to the bathroom.
True.
But anywho, I'm glad you had fun. I'm glad you saw the Sigs.
Yeah,
and maybe
me
that's
too.
Just another manifestation that you're going to see. You might see Harry at some point. Maybe tomorrow with your
Michelle,
eye patch.
You don't understand. You just saying that, I lost my breath. We can't, like,
we have to manifest it.
No, I know, but you don't understand. We can't talk about things like this because there is no more episode after that. It is. I will go on a dissertation. It's like my whole body is having a physical response right now. I'm starting to get shaky and nervous. Like,
the hormones are rushing.
I
mean,
so much.
Maybe we'll have to have maybe we'll take an attempt at a pop culture episode. That might be fun.
No, we should definitely do that regardless, but I've already planned this out. I think if you ever take a vacation or something, I'm going to have Court come on and her and I will do a hairstyle.
I love.
We're going to take on Harry Styles.
I love that so much. And
yeah.
I'll take on Taylor Swift with your sister-in-law.
Perfect.
Perfect.
You and Kate can do that. Great.
Amazing.
Love it.
Can't wait.
Hey, Kate. Amazing. Okay. We should probably jump in.
We should.
Two truths and lies. Do you want to go first?
I will go first today. First, actually, Melissa Rose, should we tell people what we're taking on today? Because my two truths, no lies is a natural segue.
I always forget to say that first. I think like, technically I'm supposed to. Today, we're taking on babies.
Wah, wah, wah.
This is a What to Expect episode. It's our second. What to Expect.
Yeah.
For a second, What to Expect episode. This one is about babies, but not in the traditional what to expect when you're expecting. This one is our twist on it, more specifically Michelle's, because this is quite literally, I probably still have it screenshot, like, what do I need to know when I was pregnant?
Oh.
And you so beautifully, as you do, broke it out into three buckets that we'll get into. But before we get into that, is there anything else that you want to intro about this? Because this is definitely your brain baby this week.
We've converged our brain babies, our what to expect and our babies coming in. I love helping people. That is a fact, whether you're a child or a grown up. And I think after I went through the pregnancy and then birthing experience, I was like ready to become a doula. Still am. Like, it just energizes me. I'm very excited about it. I love talking about it. So I'm very excited about this episode today. It's our twist, our take on it. And bringing it back to the two truths, no lies for this week. When I was pregnant with my first, and to paint a picture, this is February of 2020. So like a month before the world completely took a twist in March of 2020, I went for my 12-week checkup and my OB, she was doing the little sonogram and she told me in that very moment, this is the most control that you're ever gonna have of your baby, of your child. And that sobered me up. I'm like, oh crap. Then they're born and then like they're on their path. And in that moment, I was like, wow, great. I'm glad to have this control. I'm a controlling person. I like control. Control feels good to me, as it does for other people in this world too. And then once the baby was born, once my oldest was born, I definitely had a hard time relinquishing some control, but I knew how important that was just for him and also for me, just like as a new mom. Fast forwarding to this past weekend, we had a lot of fun family time. I now have two babes at home. And I had to be super duper flexible with my youngest's naps this past weekend, which was not easy for me to do with my first. And I was hit with that anecdote when I was back in my OB's office of like control, control, control. And for the first time, I was having a conversation with myself of like, wow, Michelle, you've come pretty far. Like, you can be in control, but you can also be pretty flexible at the same time. And both of those things haven't come easy to me to exist simultaneously. So I was like flashbacking to that OB appointment and then fast forwarding to now. And those two things can exist. You can be a very controlling person and in control and also flexible at the same time. Both of those things can exist. And I took a moment to give myself a high five.
As you should.
It felt good. It felt good because it's not easy to be both of those things, right?
No, it sure isn't.
It isn't, especially when you're a new mom. So ahead of this episode today, our what to expect with babies, I just wanted to like prime those two important tenets for me, but also for if you're listening and you too are in this newborn or 1 year, 2 year of being a new mom phase and you're kind of figuring out that balancing act. It's really, really hard, but you're doing the best that you can. And that's all you can do. It's all you can do.
It's such an important message. And not only a high five to you in that moment doing that and like, wow, look at how far I've come. But also, I want to carve out space for you, for Victoria, for our friends that went into their first time as being a mom in the middle of the hardest part of the pandemic. We're not talking late 2021. We're not talking during a particular surge. Being pregnant and giving birth to your first child,
yes,
in the first half and second half of 2020.
Oof.
I'm sure there are a lot of moms in that same situation that haven't quite recovered from that. And it's really difficult, I'm sure, to pull back from your first experience because your lens as a mom for the first time was so probably rooted in this bubble life, right?
Yeah.
So especially someone like you that is already going to feel this sense of, I want to gain control when I can, but the world around you, yeah, is completely uncontrollable and complete chaos and no answers for anything.
Exactly.
What can that do to a mom's mind. It's just, and there's no frame of reference.
Right.
Because this is your first time being a mother.
It's novel in and of itself, and then a complete novelty to be a first-time mom during that time. It doesn't help the control factor.
And then for you both, and I'm using both you and Victoria as examples here because you had babies mm-hmm. both right around the same time. But then going into having your second, where if you take the pandemic out of it, every baby's different, every pregnancy's different. That's what I've been told, right? But that's a huge environmental factor that is absolutely different with mm-hmm. both. So being like, okay, I'm going into this. This isn't my first rodeo, but then maybe coming in contact with the first time your baby's sick, and maybe they're sick a bit younger mm-hmm. than your first was, because your first wasn't able to really leave the house the first year or so of their life. They weren't really around anyone but grandparents because of what was going on around them. So then having to navigate this part of having an infant and having a newborn mm-hmm. that you didn't have to do the first time around. So again, just carving out space for not only any mom, how you've evolved over the past few years, but particularly that experience mm-hmm. is so unique and not something I'm having to go through currently. So kudos to you. Kudos to all the moms that are navigating that right now.
Thank you for saying that. I often don't carve out the space to reflect on it. So it's kind of nice to. It's cathartic to do mm-hmm. that, because there was so much newness that came the second time around that I just didn't experience by virtue of the first time being in September of 2020. So that will be a whole episode in and of itself, transitioning mm-hmm. from zero to one, and then from one to two kids, and I'll bring that experience to that episode.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, thank you for sharing.
Thank you for
listening. Killing it.
As always, and two truths, no lies from your vantage point, Melissa Rose.
Oh, man. Okay. I'll try and keep it quick because, as always, mine isn't 100% in line. So I don't want to derail this, since that was such a perfect segue into our episode. So you already know a bit about this. I'm already getting emotional. I was doing so good with it.
And we're here for you.
This past weekend, I missed my daughter's first steps. That really sucked.
Really frigging.
That really sucked. And we've already talked about this, and just, you know, breaking the glass, as I say, breaking the fourth wall. Like, if you and I typically talk about something, we don't then talk about it here again. This is a very authentic place. And we're not, you know, priming each other with what we're going to talk about. But being real and transparent here, there was no way I wasn't going to talk about this here, because I really hope that it resonates with someone, or even like someone might hear this and then remember it. And then if it happens to them, I find comfort in knowing that, you know, they're not alone. But I had always prepared myself as a working mom that I was going to miss things. Like, I might miss her first steps because I'm at work. I might miss her first words because I'm at work, or whatever it might be, all the different milestones that exist. And I was prepared for that. Did I think that I would brush it off? Absolutely not. I knew it would be hard, but I prepared myself that because I'm a working mom, I may be at work and miss something like that. So this past week, I had gone up to Boston for a work event and then flew directly from Boston back to New York, went to the office for a full day, was super behind, so ended up, you know, staying late to, you know, miss traffic. So I essentially, by Friday morning, I hadn't seen my daughter in almost 3 days. And this particular Friday, she was going over to my mother-in-law's house. So I did a walk with her in the morning. But aside from that, I really hadn't seen her in a few days. That night, we also had dinner plans, which is where I saw Siggy. So I kind of, midday Friday, was just starting to feel mopey and not like myself. I was not really clicking into what it was. I realized that I think it was just because, as I have mentioned so many times, I hadn't spent enough time with my family that week. And it really is such an immediate response that if I don't get enough time with my family, and particularly my daughter, I start to kind of wallow a bit. I need that to fill up my cup. And because she was with my mother-in-law all day and she was going to be watching her that night, it was just agreed that she would just stay there for dinner and I wasn't going to see her probably until Saturday morning. So I'm getting ready for dinner and Mike says, oh my gosh, as he's looking at his phone, and it's a video of my daughter taking her first steps at my in-laws. And I immediately just start sobbing, like hysterically crying. I'm like, oh my God, I missed it. Like, I missed it. And in that moment, I was like, I always prepared myself that I'd be at work, which is something I have to do and I want to do, but I have to do, not, you know, getting ready, putting on makeup to go have martinis with our friends. Like, it felt different to me. It felt self-indulgent. It felt selfish. It felt like I should have been there. So I expressed this to Mike, and I was like, you need to call them and tell them we're running late because I can't finish my makeup right now. And I was proud of myself. I moved through in a way of like, I'm not going to beat myself up, but I'm going to recognize the feelings I'm having right now and pay tribute to those. So I tell Mike what I just said about work, and he looks at me and he's like, okay, would it make you feel better knowing that it actually happened last night when you were at work, but I didn't want to tell you? And I was just like, no.
It still sucks, Mike.
It still sucks. He's like, she did it when she got home from school last night. I saw it. It was in the living room. She took her first like wobbly steps, but that was it. And I was like, I thought maybe that would make me feel better, but it doesn't. Anyway, we moved through it. It was really shitty. And obviously, even just thinking about it now, I hadn't cried about it since that day. But I think to talk about it, it doesn't feel good. But as you told me when we talked about it, and as Mike told me when he was comforting me, and as Kate told me, which I am so grateful for. Oh,
I want to hug you so bad. It's so hard to not be able to.
I know, it's so hard. This is an aside. I started one thought, but now I need to like lead to this. I just needed to talk to someone like other than Mike. Like, I just needed to whatever. But it was late. And at one point I called my brother just to be like, because there was an added layer that my parents were like on FaceTime with my in-laws. And I'm like,
you know, wait, everyone like, there.
Why is
Melissa.
Everyone a part of this except for me? Like, where is her mom?
Just
like,
to, like twist the knife even more.
Exactly. I'm like, what is happening? So at a certain point, I called my brother just to be like, from a comical relief standpoint, but also just really needing to like connect on this. And when I get on the phone, I realize immediately I love him, but my brother's like not the person I'm gonna connect with this on. Like, he doesn't get it, and that's okay. But he was with Kate, my sister-in-law, and I was so grateful in that moment because like, she heard how he was not doing what I needed in that moment, and she got on the phone, and she was a true sister in that moment, and I was so incredibly grateful. She didn't just tell me what I wanted to hear, but she really listened, and she really just like met me where I was, and was just, it was so appreciated. And Kate, I know you're listening, thank you so much for that. I love you so much, and I'm just so grateful to have her in my life. But anyway, as Caitlin said to me, as you said to me, as Mike said to me, kids have multiple milestones, right? But within those milestones, there's more milestones. And yeah, there's her first steps, but there's her first steps with dad. There's her first steps with mom. There's her first steps with Nino and Grampy. Mm-hmm. And the next morning, I was able to see her first steps with just me. And I was able to see her sweet little face when she was excited to show me that she was walking and how excited she was. Mm-hmm. And that to always remember being her first steps. Also, like, her getting to share that moment with her dad that Thursday before. And the first steps that she took at Nino and Grampy's was exactly where her dad took his first steps. So, like, how incredibly special is that? And that she got to have that moment with her grandparents and they got to have that moment with her. So very long and winded, as always. But my two truths, no lies, is while it's really, really hard and it really, 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 really sucks, it's also so beautiful and so exciting that she was able to have those moments with each of us in their own special way. And we can all have our own memories with that and mark that. And do I wish that I was on Thursday that maybe got the first taste of it? Of course. But, and... it's still such a beautiful moment. And once I remove my own guilt and feelings about it, all those things are still existing at the same time.
Takes every urge in my body to not make you feel better in this moment and in the moment when you first shared it with me. And I stand by that because the goal isn't a happy ending. You need to process and you have to sit with it for as long as you need. So talking about it again now and seeing it pour out, sometimes you just need to do that again.
Yeah.
It's cathartic.
Totally.
And as you know, from your daughter's perspective, her seeing your face as she's walking to you is different than when she's walking to someone else.
Totally.
So her walking to mom is so special. And you had that moment with her. And it's also important to acknowledge you're a person. You knew it was going to be hard. You did all of that work. But on the heels of this conversation on what we're taking on today, babies, no one prepares you for these moments. No. Nothing prepares you for the emotional lift that these tiny iterances take on you. You can't write it. You can't expect it. You're also a human. You're not waiting around with your knee in like crisscross applesauce waiting for these milestones to take place. This isn't the last milestone. This is one of the first big ones.
Yeah, that's right.
As you know, there's going to be so many more coming after this. Mm-hmm. And you're still not going to be waiting around. You're a human. You're living your life. And you know how much more enhanced your life is by virtue of your daughter being a part of it. And all of the subsequent milestones that you will get to witness and that you will hear about for the first time and then will witness subsequently. But no one can prepare you for these moments. So just give yourself a big hug for getting through it and knowing how special it is when she looks at you coming to you.
Thank you.
Irreplaceable and speaks for itself.
It sure is. It's seared into my mind. And then a quick, just funny moment. Reason 1.5 million that my husband, Mike, is the best. Apparently, when the video came through, he called before I saw it. He called my mother-in-law and was like, unsend the video. And she was like, I don't know how to do that. So when he actually was looking at his phone, oh, look, that was staged. Like, he had tried to have the evidence burned. And while I so appreciate that and I love him for that, and I'll never forget that. You know, when we think of when did I take my first steps, mom and dad? Like, this is going to be the story, and we're going to love that part of it because that is just such a indicator of the heart that he has and that her dad has. But like, what's the plan there now for the rest of our daughter's life and my life? I'm going to be like the first step she ever took. I mean, telling this story and everyone in our families is going to be like, as far as she knows, like, that's my worst nightmare. Please. Absolutely not.
I love that because it also highlights your daughter's the main character of the story, not you.
Yeah, right.
Not
exactly.
Not your in-laws. Mm-hmm. Not your husband. She's the main character.
Mm-hmm.
You're the supporting actress. You're not right? The main character.
That's such a great point too, right? This is about her. It's not about mom. And that would, while again, the gut reaction, I love it. He's trying to protect me. But that would literally right. go against everything that I am on this platform about weekly. Like, not putting my own shit on my daughter. It's not about that, but just the image of him like running into the next room, like, was there a revert? Unsend, unsend.
Literally. Oh, man.
Well, anyway, that was long and winded. We need to get back to babies, speaking of. So let's jump right in. But thank you for listening. And as always, thank you. I love you.
Love you. Sending you and your mama heart the biggest, most squeeziest, juicy hug that I can. So I really do love that anecdote because it lays the foundation for the importance of preparation. But mm-hmm. the two truths, no lie there. You can prepare, 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 and you still don't know what to expect fully, right?
Yeah.
So we always preach on this platform and we preach to each other. Knowledge is power. And I love mm-hmm. Dr. Becky's framework about this. Not knowing information is actually what's scary, right? The absence of knowing is what can ignite the fear. And when you're thinking mm-hmm. about pregnancy and what to expect before you have your baby, like, preparation is so important. But then in chapter two,
literally
on, you just don't know. You don't mm-hmm. know what to expect. So I think the purpose of this episode, what to expect with babies, mm-hmm. we're really zooming out and we're thinking about like the 10,000 foot view of what was helpful for us in this prenatal phase of preparing for your child to be born. So as Mel mentioned before, after my first child was born, I was ready to become a doula and support mommies on their journey. I didn't, by the way.
Yet.
But the way that I like to think about the best preparation, again, for me, just a quick acknowledgement, our experience is our own for a reason. It's going to look different than your experience, and what worked for us might not work for you. But our goal is to share, because sharing can just perpetuate more sharing and help someone A, feel less alone, but B, feel more prepared. I don't think we talk about this enough as a society. So our hope is to get granular, but also ultimately to just help you with a crevice of something to expect that you might experience, you might not experience. So again, what works for you and what happens to you might be different than the person next to you. But the three buckets that I really like to lean on when preparing to welcome a baby into the world. The first bucket is focusing solely on labor and delivery. So what you need during that time when you first go into labor and delivering, that's one bucket. The second bucket is moving quickly into chapter two, which is baby sleep. That's one other knowledge point that I think is really, really important to learn before you have to focus on when your baby is sleeping. You don't want to be learning about how to get your baby to sleep when you're actively trying to get your baby to sleep. You want to do that before your baby is born. This is the purpose and genesis of this episode. And then the third and last bucket is feeding. Feeding your baby, whether that's breastfeeding, whether that's formula fed, fed is best, period, full stop.
Mm-hmm.
But learning about that before you're feeding your baby in that active moment is really, really important. So I like looking at those three buckets of knowledge when you're in your second trimester, and then further crystallizing some facts in your third trimester So by the time you have your baby in your arms, there's so much novelty by virtue of that time. You don't want to be focusing your mental and emotional resources on learning all of that from scratch. We know that humans learn best when they experience something and also when they have repetition to something. Mm-hmm. So the repetition part of it can come when you have baby in your arms, but it's not the first time you're exposed to that content. I've talked a lot. What are your thoughts on anything that I've just said?
Oh, I love it. I just absolutely love it. This was so incredibly helpful for me. Let's reframe it for a second, specifically for someone who might be pregnant right now or might be thinking about getting pregnant and can't sit here and be like, yes, totally get that, right? Think about when you started a new job and you're training. Think about the last time that you were in a new role and it's that first week, those first 2 weeks, and you're shadowing people, you're training, you're doing this, you're learning all the new systems, and it's really overwhelming. And everyone's giving you these different toolkits. Maybe you have a handbook, maybe you have all these different decks that run through how we proceed with X, Y, Z. So you can sit in those trainings and you can absorb everything. But it's when you start the job, mm-hmm. when those things really come to life. And you're, oh, right. Okay. I remember we talked about this. Let me go back to the playbook. Let me go back to that deck on XYZ and really put this to the ground. That is exactly how this is. You're going to be learning about these things or hearing about these things, diving deep on this, and it's still all hypothetical, right? Mm-hmm. However, then when it's happening, you can have those aha moments of, oh, right. I remember when I read about this in XYZ book. I remember when my doula during my labor and delivery class talked about this. So that's for me why I found it so useful and so helpful to frame it into these buckets as well, as you had so beautifully carved out for myself and now for our listeners. And that's not just, oh my God, there is this baby coming into the world, but really looking at these three things to focus on so that you could pull back to this once you are in those particular phases and doing those particular things rather than starting from scratch. Because think about it, you're at that new job, right? If you didn't have those 2 weeks of onboarding and you're just thrown to the wolves and they say, hey, here, by the way, if you need, here's a few PowerPoint situations and here's this and here's that, now go run. You're completely lost. You might have the resources. You can pull out the book. You can like download Taking Care of Babies, but it's that much more useful taking a look beforehand and then referencing back as needed.
And by the way, during that time period, you're going to be bleeding for 2 weeks. And oh, by the way, during that time period,
maybe more.
You're not going to be able to go to the bathroom by yourself for a couple of days. All of those little things on top of it. So making the invisible visible, this is all on your plate. Having those three buckets is just one little thing to have in your back pocket to think about ahead of time. And as it relates to the labor and delivery, if we want to just like not dive into that bucket, because right. I would love to have a full episode to dive in. I'm putting correct. Like a hand in or a foot in to that bucket right now in each of these buckets. With labor and delivery, I think it's so important to think about like the type of person you are. How do you handle stress? How do you handle when something is happening to your actual body? How are you going to communicate that if you have a partner in the room at that time? And then like, how are you going to handle the ambiguity? You have something in your mind of how something is going to be or what something is going to look like. And you have to be able to completely relinquish that. How do you handle those moments? And starting there, then you can pin it down more granularly with labor and delivery. I was 10 days late with my first. I was ferociously Googling, what does a contraction feel like? How will I know if I'm in labor? I convinced myself, because I was so late, that I was never going to go into labor. I promise you, if you're listening to this and you're like 38 weeks pregnant. I would even say 37 weeks pregnant. Mm-hmm. Then it becomes a point like it could happen anytime. Mm-hmm. From 37 weeks to 41 plus a couple days, weeks, it felt longer than his whole life. Okay. It was so long. So you drive yourself bonkers. And I say that because, again, I wish I had someone tell me, you're going to have your baby. The baby's going to come out. And for me, a contraction, and I'm going to throw this question back to you, Mel. For me, a contraction felt like one big body Charlie horse, where like I just like froze up and then released. I was induced 2 times. And I remember listening to podcasts of people's birth stories to think like, if I go into labor naturally, what is it going to feel? I don't actually know what it's like to go into labor naturally because that wasn't my experience both times. But when I got to that point where I felt a contraction, I couldn't believe that I Googled what is a contraction feel like. And I thought that I was never going to feel what it was going to feel like. You feel it.
No.
You absolutely feel it. So, Melissa, what did a contraction feel like for you?
I also was induced. I also had the frame of reference of your Charlie horse, right? I think it's a great analogy because it is true. You think about getting a Charlie horse in your foot or your calf. Nothing else exists. Nothing else exists. I had a preview, even though I was induced, because I was induced early. I had high blood pressure. I ended up having postpartum preeclampsia. So I was induced to avoid becoming eclamptic. I was at 39 weeks. I would say around 37 weeks, I started having contractions that were what people refer to as lightning crotch. It's as pleasant as it sounds. Mine were particularly, it was in the groin crotch area, but mine also existed in the butthole. And no, when I
no one
tell
tells you about
you,
that. No one
when
tells
I,
you about that.
They sure do not. And when I tell you, when you're driving your car and all of the sudden lightning runs through your asshole, I can promise you, you'll never guess. Am I maybe having a contraction? No, you're having a contraction. That's what it felt like, at least. So I remember going to one of my appointments and being like, yeah, so I've been having, because I would get it in all of those different areas, but then I would also have them in the normal area in my belly. And I would say to the doctor, you know, I've been having some false labor, but some Braxton Hicks. And she's like, no, you're having contractions. That's not Braxton Hicks. Like, what you are experiencing are contractions. And I was like, oh, okay. Okay, cool. And bring it back, all joking aside, with labor and delivery, I really want to underscore my feelings about the term birth plan. Mm. I think we should call it a birth suggestion because while there are many people that for all reasons that are important to them and their partner, that is going to be their plan unless it is a dire situation. For me, my only goal is a happy and healthy baby. That is my only goal. That is my only plan. There are things that I read about, that I felt strongly about, that I took a class and really, really dove deep on, that should I have the opportunity to dictate how this goes in a perfect rainbow and sunshine situation, this would be my suggestion. However, we don't have control over this. And I think sometimes getting caught up in, because everyone talks about it, right?
Yeah.
What's your birth plan?
Yeah.
Do you have a birth plan? What is it? Even at the hospital, they ask, which is great, but a lot of different things can happen. And to your point, if you are someone who has difficulty with the unknown, has difficulty coping in stressful situations, and might lean in a controlling way, having this birth plan becomes this rock solid foundation of like, I have control, I have a birth plan. And then what can actually happen on the back end is it can cause more anxiety and more distress in a really, really stressful time because you're veering from the plan, when in reality, this is a suggestion, because yes, the doctors are there to take care of your baby and the doctors are there to take care of you. I suggest that if you have anxiety going into this and what feels like maybe atypical, you know, has an increased amount of anxiety, it is really feeling very stringent in their birth plan, research a doula, research a midwife, and if you can afford the resource to do so, have someone in the room with you to help advocate for that, because they will be then able to sit in that moment with you and say, you know what, this is a situation in which the doctor, we're not going to push back. And that can give you that comfort in that moment. Knowledge is power. A plan is powerful. But a lot can happen.
I wrote down, actually, when you were just talking about this, you have to have a birth plan A, and you have to have B, C, D, E, and F. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to rewrite them. You just mm-hmm. have to know that there's a chance there could be a plan B, a plan C, a plan E, a plan F. And maybe there's a space where you have the opportunity to fully share your birth story, because your birth story wasn't plan A. It wasn't even plan B. Mm-hmm. So there's a space for that. But I think tying it all together, I love the birth suggestion. I love the way of thinking about it. If you are stuck on the birth plan, just know that that plan could be multicolored. And you have to also befriend the grayness that you don't know how it's going to go. But your done goal is a healthy baby and a healthy mom. Those are two very important constants. That is the end of your birth plan. Another thing, bringing it back to labor and delivery before we skim the surface of the other two buckets, I took an amazing self-paced course from the Positive Birth Company. It is a UK-based company, and it looked at how your body is working and what's physiologically happening. And that part of it was really helpful for me, because I understood from a very objective standpoint what was going on when you went into labor, and then when you went into transitional labor, and then when it was time to start pushing, and what was actually happening, and how I could utilize my control, the control that I did have in that moment, to help the process, not hinder the process, right? So I had my essential oils on my scrunchie. That was an idea, by the way, that surfaced, to have scrunchies that are infused with essential oils for birthing. So maybe we'll brand them MTAKE branding.
We should, because you told me about that, and not to derail, but like very quickly, I had my emotional support items. And that's what I say to people when they're talking about their hospital bag. I was like,
yes,
who cares? Who cares? Who cares? You need emotional support items. Yeah. What is it that's going to make you feel safe, make you feel ready to take this on, both before, during, after? And I had the essential oils because of what you said. I had my scrunchies because of what you said. I had my chapstick, my lip mask, my birthing headband, as Zoe and I both have.
Yes. See, this is where we want this series to go. Like, I picture a whole episode just about labor and delivery, so we can get granular in our experience. Like, what were our emotional support items that we needed? What helped us in those specific moments? And then the two other buckets that we mentioned, the baby sleep and then the feeding, high level 10,000 foot view on baby sleep, taking care of babies course before the baby was born was so helpful to know what to do, because I was not my best self at 2 a.m. when I was tired and my body was healing. Like, I was not thinking rationally. And I needed something to pull from. So taking care of babies, shout out to you, because you got us to a place where my two kids had a solid sleep foundation, which allowed me to have sleep and my husband to have sleep. So that, again, huge. Anything quickly that you want to share about baby sleep?
I did the same. I did taking care of babies. I know a lot of people like Moms on Call. I know there's so many different approaches that you can use and courses. But again, doing it beforehand, there was one very early on, she talks about how before 4 weeks old, so the first month, you don't expect anything of them. And that was really helpful. And I hear myself say that a lot too, to new moms. The first 4 weeks, it's a, like, it's always a suggestion, but the first 4 weeks, like, we're not sleep training. Like, this is, this is what it's going to be. So just buckle up. And I, knowing that going into it was super helpful. And it was the first thing on your mind. And the first thing that I could pull from was like, well, we're still in the first 4 weeks. We know that this doesn't apply till XYZ.
I love that. Yeah. And even if it goes after, like, I remember contact naps at 6 weeks, that's okay. I remember contact weeks at 8 weeks, right? Like, it's all just a framework. It's not a rigid approach of thinking about this. It's just to have the knowledge ahead of time. That's the big takeaway here.
Exactly. And in those moments, I remember in the middle of the night, not even just going into the course, but in the middle of the night, Googling taking care of babies, 6 week sleep regression, and just seeing what blog post came up and just reading through it. It provides a sense of a one-stop shop in a way. Like, if you find a framework that really works for you, or that you even just resonate with, you like the language used, you like the approach, maybe just try and stick with that for a little bit. Because there's so much on the internet, and then you can really go down such a rabbit hole. And when we're talking about sleep and lack thereof for mom and co-parent, it's having say, okay, well, here's what we agreed on. Here's the course that we both took, or here's what we're thinking. And it creates this almost like triangulation, but like in a good way, I guess. Like, this is what we're going to agree upon. Versus when everyone's sleep deprived and I don't know, I think this, you think that. It just, it provides a good middleman, middle woman.
Yeah, middle person.
Middle person.
It's so true. It's so, so true. And then that last bucket of feeding, I think so many themes that we've already mentioned in the first two buckets stand. I took an amazing $19 course from Milkology. It was very, disclaimer, caveat, it was very heavy on breastfeeding.
Yeah.
So just knowing that before you take it, I even remember talking to you, Mel, like, we were both like, okay, like, it's clear that this course is recommending that.
Yes.
But hear us loud and clear, fed is best.
Yeah,
I think that course was really helpful to understand big picture what's happening to your body right after your child is born and how that impacts your milk coming in and when to expect that. And I went into full blown like it felt like labor shakes. Oh, by the way, and I always tell my friends this who are about to have a baby, I excessively shook during labor, and that scared me. Nobody told me that. So I always like to mention, you might shake. And I remember when my milk was coming in 3 days post-birth, I went into that state again. Ryan put so many blankets over me. I was fully shaking. I'm like, oh, this is what they were talking about in that class. This is your milk coming in. You could get a fever. Like, you don't know these things. You have to learn all of these things. This is your body that it's happening to.
Yeah, and I want to double click on the very breastfeeding heavy. So this is also an experience that many people experience it with the lactation consultants in the hospital, or even if you're trying to breastfeed and you're putting your best foot forward to hire a lactation consultant or you go to a center for this. Anyone who does not know ahead of time can feel really helpless in those situations when you have lactation consultants coming to you and putting a lot of pressure on you about how you should be breastfeeding, when you should be breastfeeding, absolutely no pacifiers, absolutely no bottles, absolutely no formula. If that is how you authentically feel in your heart and you believe that, then you, great, amazing. Not trying to change your mind on that at all. But if you are someone who is just going into this with that same mentality of, I'd like to breastfeed, I think, but we'll see what happens. And then there's lactation consultants and you're vulnerable, you're sleep deprived, your baby's having trouble latching. Just truly, truly know fed is best. As an example, I had postpartum preeclampsia. One of the interventions for that is a magnesium drip. magnesium in general, as well as hypertension, can both cause a decrease in milk for breastfeeding. And because my milk hadn't even come in yet, I was even more behind the eight ball with that. So we were in a hospital for about, all said and done, about 6 days. And I was breastfeeding my daughter. We thought everything was going fine. And quite frankly, we were really focused on me because, like, I was, you know, trying to regulate my blood pressure. And it wasn't until a couple days where they noticed that her weight had dropped and she was starting to become jaundiced, and the lactation consultants really jumped in and were like, oh, well, you have to be feeding this way, you have to be feeding that way. But then it was the nurses in the nursery when now we were pivoting. It was no longer me who was in triage mode. It was now my daughter, because she had lost the weight. I was getting discharged from the hospital and she was going to have to stay over, and she was going to have to get formula. That was the reality. And I remember just this feeling of guilt, because for 2 days, these lactation consultants had been telling me I need to be trying to feed her around the clock so my milk comes in and this and that. And then they're saying, okay, now you have to go home and leave her here. We'll give her formula, don't worry. And I was so confused, even though I went into it with the most flexible mindset of, I'm going to try my best, but if not, it's okay. But in my vulnerable moment, I backpedaled on that and I didn't think it was okay anymore. All that goes to say, as a result, because she was underweight, we ended up, and my milk was slow to come in, we ended up giving her formula when we got home. Like, she would get a serving of formula every day before bed. She cluster fed for like 6 weeks. It was insane, which we'll get all into that later at a different point in time. But on the other side, she was healthy. Mike was able to bond with her.
Yes,
she was healthy. She was fed. Mike was able to bond with her and give her that bottle once a day. I was able to get a break during cluster feeding. And she never, you know, who's to say if this is the reason why, but she never had any issues taking a bottle. She never had any issues taking formula later down the line when my milk supply then ended up completely vanishing and I had to unexpectedly switch over to formula. So is all that proven? No. But in our experience, it ended up being a really great thing that we introduced both. Don't let, whether it's courses or lactation consultants or whoever, just family, friends, convince you that your way is not the right way. Every family needs to function with what's best for them. So take all of these resources, take all of these buckets, and think about, bring it back to what you were saying earlier. How do you function best? Or how do you function when you're under pressure? Also, how does your partner function in those moments? And what kind of system works best for you in all of these buckets?
Your data collecting, your job in that first trimester, second trimester, especially in the third trimester, is to data collect and fill your arsenal with this information, not to overwhelm, but for it to align and click when you're immersed to then make decisions. But our goal is to dive really deep into these buckets. So throwing this back to you all, our listeners, I've actually gotten some feedback that we should be talking a little bit about friends and family members who don't have babies but want to support a family member who has babies. What does that look like? What does that feel like? So tell us more of what you want us to take on in this like mini series branch off of What to Expect with Babies, because we want to really, really dive deep with you into all of these fun buckets.
We sure do. We sure do. I'd love to share one thing out before we head off, because I know this is a long episode. The year that my daughter was born, my word of the year, which is a concept that's a reframe on New Year's resolutions. You just pick a word to kind of live by, a mantra for the year. One of my friends introduced that to me a few years ago and I've been adopting it. But that year it was flexibility. Flexibility with expectations, flexibility with others, flexibility with myself, because I knew that I am someone who struggles when I am not in control. So really wanted to start leaning into the flexibility of it all. And it really served me in that first year, you know, my last trimester and then her first 9 months of life. So there was this one phrase that really stuck with me in that vein, which was, clear on the outcomes, flexible on the approach. What is the done goal? Here's our plan. Here's our suggestion. Here's what we're thinking. Clear on the outcome of what we hope here. Clear on the outcome of what we want at the end of that labor and delivery. Clear on the outcome of we hope that maybe there could be 2 hours of consolidated sleep. Clear on I'd like to have my baby fed. Flexible on the approach and how we get there. So really drilling that in for anyone that is struggling right now or overly consuming content, going into this, trying to find some sense of control where they can, clear on the outcome, flexible on the approach.
I love that so much. I'm picturing in my head, like a framework. There's in my brain, there's like this square at the top and the done goal is in there. And let's just use fed baby, for example, in that. And then there's multiple different roads on getting there. And I don't know which road I'm going to go down. And that part, that gray ambiguity, I know I don't do super well with it. But I'm naming it, I'm taming it, and I'm understanding that I might go down any of those avenues. And as long as that avenue leads to that done goal, I'm clear on the outcome, but I'm flexible on the path, the approach to get there. Wow, I love that. Thank you for sharing.
Of course, yeah. Flexibility, man. Flexibility.
Flexibility. It's not easy.
Sure isn't. Well, I loved this today. Did you have a think about? I know we're like, this is two episodes, you know, basically at this point.
I think we leave it at your think about. We're going to bring back my think about that I had today for the episode diving deeper into labor and delivery.
I love it. I love it so much. Let us know, as Michelle said, if there's anything specific that you want to hear under these buckets. When we get really granular, please reach out. We're going to be doing the episodes whether you like it or not. So you might as well share with us if you have any specific questions.
Or another bucket for us to add to this, like something that maybe wasn't as visible from our vantage points, but it was really important for you to make visible from yours.
Love that. Thank you so much. I love you.
Love you.
And I can't wait to talk to you in a few minutes when we hang up.
Can't wait. That's the way the cookie crumbles here on the Untake. Constant communication.
Constant communication. All right. Well, we love you guys. You know where to find us at the MTake Podcast on Instagram. We can't wait to hear from you. We hope you enjoyed. Let us know your thoughts, your feelings, your concerns, and where you'd like us to go next.
Not your concerns. We could do without them. Just kidding.
We're open to feedback here at the MTake. Yes. We really are. As long as it's kind. It can be constructive. But it has to be kind.
Choose constructive, kind feedback.
Constructive kindness.
Love that.
I love it. The alliteration. Bring it back to Harry. There. Treat people with kindness.
Toodle.
Love you. Bye.
Bye.